Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Google Plus is getting redesigned yet again. Twitter Amplify is bringing videos to your Twitter stream. Teens hate Facebook, but they're all on Facebook. All that and more.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 112, recorded Friday, May 24th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 900,000 high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SocialHour5. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour today at sap.com/twit. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another fun-filled edition of The Social Hour. It's your Friday afternoon treat, or your treat whenever you happen to be watching or listening to us. From Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I am back from Prince Edward Island, where I was for the last show, and back home in Toronto. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm very well, Amber. What's the picture behind you? I haven't seen that there before.
Oh, you know what? This is a picture of, and for our audio listeners, I'll try to describe it as well as I can. This is a picture of me, my camera, let's see here, with my grandmother.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so this is a long time ago. This would have been in the late 1970s, I believe. And maybe I can say early 80s. That gives me a younger age. And it was just a picture that I absolutely loved. You know, the colors are bright and just a nice little memory of my grandmother, who has since passed away, but we were very, very close. So just put it up in my bookcase recently.
Well, Amber's grandma gets to join us on The Social Hour.
Yeah.
That's great.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, maybe I'll bring some pictures here and you know, put them on my little guy behind us.
Do it.
Yeah.
Do
next
it, Sarah.
Week. Next week we'll do that. You don't care about our schedule. For now, we're just concerned with today. I guess we should start off with some Twitter news. Why the heck not? Twitter had kind of a big week. They launched a few new, I don't know, I guess you could call them features. They're certainly attractive for advertising partners. The first is called Lead Generation, which is basically an add-on to the whole Twitter card feature. And the idea behind this is that, so, all right, Amber, I don't even know how you really describe lead generation. We talked about this on TNT a little bit earlier this week, and I guess it's, as a advertiser, you could have a Twitter card that what basically was an action item for somebody. So if you are an ice cream shop, you might have a tweet that's like, hey, if you like our ice cream, click here to get, you know, 10% off your next cone or something like that. I don't know, even know if that's a good deal. And so I, as a Twitter user who's logged into Twitter, my information would auto-populate already because Twitter has already worked with that merchant so that my information is being shared. And I go ahead and say, like, yeah, good times. And then I'm good to go, I guess, next time I go in there. I don't even know if I'm explaining that right, but it's sort of like a rewards that you might see on Foursquare or Yelp or that sort of thing, but on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think traditionally lead generation has been a difficult thing on Twitter. It's been hard to really get someone to give you information on Twitter and then capture information. You know, of course, you can follow a brand, but you can't really go much further than that. So I love this idea. I mean, I think it's really cool. I don't think it's that intrusive to users. The idea that, you know, your favorite ice cream shop, if we want to use that example, has some type of ad and then says, join the club if you want to get more details about this offer or get a coupon for this offer. And then simply your email that offer, hopefully immediately. I think it makes a lot of sense for Twitter to have this as an advertising feature for some of the companies who would be interested in it, and it makes perfect sense for them as they try to increase their advertising revenue as well. So a good move on their part, and I think it will be used a lot. I did notice that in this article, Sarah, on the Next Web, they said this is just available for promoted tweets. So it will be very clear that this is a promoted tweet as far as I understand, but I could also see, you know, smaller brands wanting to take advantage of something like this, even just to capture email addresses.
Yeah, I do too. I think that was one of my questions, was like, is this a promoted tweet type of a thing, or is this just if you happen to be following that ice cream shop anyway on Twitter? Because if you're not following the ice cream shop, then I mean, it's not like that many people are going to take advantage of an offer unless they're already following that account. And brands have enough of a problem getting people to follow them anyway and having interesting tweets to share. But yeah, promoted tweets that are promoted with some sort of an action item that might benefit me as far as saving money, I think that's a very interesting avenue for Twitter. I think it's really smart. And, you know, it brings more depth to the idea of promoted tweets. It makes people look at them a little bit longer. And I just don't... What, Amber, you mentioned lead generation, like you know that term. Is that like is that a term that other companies are using? Because that's the first time that I'd ever heard it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of software tools out there right now that allow you to manage lead generation. So it just means essentially looking for new customers. So the idea that you're trying to generate new customers. Now on Twitter, it's hard to do that because how do you prove to someone follows you that how can you turn that into a transaction? It's not that easy to do. But with this, because you are able to immediately send them an email because you get their permission, all of a sudden they have an example in the story about Microsoft. If they launched some new hardware, you opted in to get the email, you could get an email with a discount and maybe you bought that product right away because you've initially showed that interest. And so all of a sudden, they can prove the return on investment in the advertiser spending money on this. And I think it's been difficult to prove that in the past on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If that made sense.
Yeah. I'm glad you told me that because you know more about this than I do. So Twitter, but this wasn't the only thing that Twitter announced this week. Also, Twitter Amplify.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting feature. And I know when they launched this, they had a blog post. I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, Sarah, but I had just read it because I did a quick little news hit on this today that said that 95% of online conversation about television shows actually happens on Twitter. Yeah. I had no idea. So more and more people, you know, the majority of people talking about television shows are doing so on Twitter. It makes sense for them to have this Twitter Amplify feature. They've hooked up with a few different broadcasters. The idea being that they can essentially almost like embed little video clips within tweets from some of these broadcasters so that the broadcasters have an opportunity to advertise through video right within your Twitter stream. I know they use the NBA as an example here where they have a little video clip. Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot of information if there's a limit on these videos. I wasn't able to find that right away. But again, I think a smart move on their part, especially based on those stats.
Yeah, you've got BBC America, Fox, the Weather Channel, Fuse. Those are some of the partners that Twitter is rolling out. I kind of love this. I mean, when you look at the NBA clip and it's part of this Twitter card, it's very clear. It's kind of interesting how you've got a Facebook sharing button and then a Twitter sharing button, which I guess is like a retweet type of a thing. And then you have an expanded button that would, I guess, take you to other social networks. And you've got a little, you know, there's a sort of a little ad down here at the bottom. And it says, yeah, follow us. And I don't know, Amber. There's part of me who thinks Twitter is just going to get more and more complicated. Because you look at this and it's like, that's sort of a complicated little tweet there, right? There's a lot of information. But at the same time, this is really smart, especially for, like, in the NBA example, they say it's a big, you know, there's a big block. You know, one of the players blocked somebody else. That's the sort of thing, like, if it's a small clip, or a short clip, rather, and it gets shared a bunch of times, then, you know, the NBA is going to end up getting more followers because people say, ooh, I like the sort of thing that they're sharing with us on a regular basis. So it's rich content.
It is. And I think of my own habits on my computer. You know, I literally have my email open and then I always have Twitter open. So it seems more and more if you can get people to live inside the Twitter universe and do much more there, like watch videos and just have that experience, it makes a lot of sense for some of these companies. And Sarah, speaking of different social media companies, Google Plus had another redesign. I actually missed this in the headlines and I know you put it in the rundown. I didn't know that they had recently done this, but they have some new look basically to their mobile version, as far as I understand.
Yeah, so it's the Android version and the mobile web version that's designed to look basically like the desktop version. So you've got sort of card-based posts here that, you know, it's kind of that Pinterest-y type of a thing for Google+. That is, it's pretty much just the mobile version of Google+ is catching up to the big new version of Google Plus that rolled out, gosh, what was it, about 2 weeks ago now? Maybe not even. And the iOS app doesn't have some of these enhancements, but there are cards on iOS. So it's kind of just a, streamlined approach, no matter how you're approaching Google Plus. I love the new redesign, Amber. I think that it is really nice looking, and I'm still not hanging out on Google Plus, so there you go. I don't know what it's going to take.
I know. I feel the same way. You know, every time they do something new and they have it redesigned, I love the look of it. And yet I find myself not fitting it into my habits. But I'm trying, Sarah. I'm still committed. You know, maybe once or twice a week I try to post something there. But hopefully I can up that even further. And, you know, part of my problem, I don't know if you have this, but I'm always using different devices and different computers and testing out new products. And so I tend to have my happy little services that I use on a regular basis. And sometimes I just forget to go into the Google Plus environment. But with more and more features that are compelling, particularly Hangouts, which I know we've talked a lot about, I can see, you know, the gradual shift that's going to happen.
Yeah, this was, you know, this was basically part of the announcements at I almost called it Plus I.O., Google I.O., 41 new Google Plus features that, you know, the Pinterest look that everyone's calling it Pinterest-y, but basically the card-based stream was announced at I.O. So really it's, you know, anybody who's accessing Google Plus in the mobile version will notice that it is prettier than ever and looks a lot like the same version that you would visit on the web. Not a huge update, but just, you know, it just shows that Google is committed to people accessing Google Plus from all sorts of different devices.
Definitely. And Sarah, you know, I think when I think about not using Google Plus on a regular basis, I'm thinking to my Twitter habits. I don't know about you, but when Twitter first launched, I would say that I wasn't using it all the time. I mean, it probably took a year or two until pretty much everybody started using it that I was using it on such a frequent basis. So I think it's okay to kind of ease into some of these social services. And I would put Google Plus in that category.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Plus, we love you. We do. We're going to try to commit to you eventually.
It's not you, it's us.
Yeah, here it is. You know, Ayaz before the show was saying to me, Amber, do you maintain a Google Plus page for the Social Hour? You probably do, right? Because it's called the Social Hour. Why wouldn't you? And I was like, we don't, and there's no good reason for that. We absolutely should. I mean, we should be on every social network. But then you get into the whole, like, is the Social Hour going to have a presence on every social network? Mm-hmm. Well, that sort of dilutes the whole idea of conversation. So then what do you choose? And I don't know that we've figured out the answer for that yet. I mean, that is sort of, that's a question a lot of brands have.
Yeah, and I think more and more people just love connecting with individuals, you know, versus brands. And I think that's what we get is we get people talking to us individually or together on Twitter or these other tools. So it doesn't seem like there's a real need for it right now. And I don't know, maybe that will change. But right now it seems to work. And Sarah, here is a story that we have talked about so much on the show. And I don't know if this is ever going to go away, especially as Facebook seems to get bigger and bigger. But maybe teens are leaving it en masse based on this particular study.
Yeah, teenagers apparently are really over Facebook. Okay, so this is according to a Pew research report, and that states, among other things, that 94% of teenagers use Facebook. They have around 425 Facebook friends, so that's quite a bit. Yet, they don't like it anymore. if you break down some of these stats, Facebook is by far the most used social network. However, there are reasons that teens want to move away from Facebook onto networks like Instagram or even Twitter, which is, I guess Twitter is making some bit of a resurgence, especially because of protected accounts. Yeah, I noticed this on Instagram, Amber, quite a bit. I don't know if you do. So, you know, sometimes I'll click on someone's profile because maybe they made a funny comment on a friend's photo, or I'm visiting profiles of people that I don't know from time to time. And a good number of them, they're not just always teenagers, but they're locked. They're locked accounts. And I think, oh, you know, too bad. I wonder why you'd lock your account, because you might take really nice pictures and I'll never see them. Or I could, you know, ask to be their friend, but I don't know them. But a lot of it, I think, is to stay away from parents. So
yeah,
you can
take
the kind of pictures you want, and you don't have to worry about your parents being on the network. You can protect things on Facebook too, but there is sort of a the adults are here as well type thing.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're bang on. And just before we started talking about this, I went on Twitter just to be as social as we possibly can and just ask people for their feedback about why teens are leaving Twitter or Facebook, or is this even true? Someone, Acura Sherway, says that my teen's done with Facebook a few years back, blames grandmas. And I guess that means that too many grandparents on Facebook. A couple of other comments. One from, looks like this is from Christella says, I really don't think they'll delete their accounts, but maybe use Twitter more. And she thinks that maybe this is being blown a little bit out of proportion. So some feedback there from people. Another one, Matt Singley says, I don't think they're tired of Facebook. They are tired of their parents and grandparents being on there. So that seems to be a pretty common theme.
Well, that's just a modern version of being a teen, right? It's like, as soon as your parents are there, then you don't want to be at the party anymore. I mean, that's Facebook as much as, I mean, I have a lot of family members on Facebook and it's fun for me, but it probably would have been a lot less fun if I were 15 and wanting to, you know, have friends comment on, I don't know, pictures of me at the dance, or I don't know, who knows. But what's interesting about this is, of the teens that were polled, overwhelmingly everybody's using Facebook. And apparently a lot of kids in school say, well, you have a Facebook account and, you know, you start like a Facebook group every school year, and you're in that Facebook group with the kids that are in the same class as you, or that, you know, are taking the same, you know, have the same history teacher, that sort of thing. So it's kind of an extension of your profile at school. But that's like, you kind of have to do that. It's not really like the fun place to hang out anymore. It's more of a utility. Big news last week, we talked about this on the Social Hour, although it wasn't official until a couple days later, was that Yahoo bought Tumblr. Of the teens polled, only 5% say that they use Tumblr, which seems pretty low to me, because Tumblr supposedly is such a hip network, you know, full of kids that Yahoo so desperately wants, as far as that demographic goes. And then 3% say that they use Google+. So, yeah. So, and 1% on Pinterest. Why do you think that is? Is Pinterest a little bit more of a, you know, housewife type of demo? Do you have to somehow be older to want to curate your virtual scrapbook?
I don't know, but I'm starting to think that if you want your teen to stop using one of these networks, you just sign on and maybe talk about it a lot and say that you're using it and all your friends are using it. Maybe that would deter them.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. If mom has a locked down Instagram account, all of a sudden you're like,
Yeah.
No. Well, I guess what I'm doing isn't so, you know, rebellious.
Exactly. Exactly. So interesting. Now, we have a couple of Pandora stories, and Sarah, I'm going to have to throw these back to you because we still don't have Pandora in Canada, only available, I think, in the U.S. I don't know where else, but we obviously haven't had access to Pandora for some time, but it looks like there's some pretty cool new features for U.S. users.
Yeah, and you know what? I apologize, Amber, because that sucks. I put in a story here that you're like, well, all right, tell me about a service that I don't have access to. I love Pandora, and we cover Pandora pretty extensively here on Twit when there's a new feature. And I thought that the idea that Pandora will now enable automatic sharing to the music section of Facebook was interesting, because for a while, Pandora really didn't have any presence on Facebook. You know, you've got your folks that every time they listen to a song on Spotify or on RDO or another streaming music service, you get a little update there. I have my RDO sharing turned on my profile. I believe it's public. So anybody who wants to look at that can. But yeah, so Pandora has said, Chief Technology Officer Tom Conrad, hello, Tom, he's actually a friend of mine, said in a post on Pandora that on iPhone, on Android, and at Pandora.com, you can automatically publish your Pandora music activity, and it'll populate your musical identity to Facebook's newly launched music section. So that's, it's sort of taking advantage of a segment of Facebook that's all about music. And he says it's easy. You just toggle on, a toggle on your phone or press of a button, and you're ready to go. You can customize what you share, including your listening activity, the tracks and artists you like, the people you follow Pandora, that sort of thing. And you'll always be able to edit your activity on Facebook in case there's one of those songs that you listen to that you really just don't want your friends to know about, which is always, Amber, that's always the issue with me, is that sometimes I listen to a song because, I don't know, I want to have you listen to 5 seconds of the worst song I've ever heard, but there's no context there. So someone sees on Facebook, oh, Sarah listened to, you know, that song by, trying to think of an artist I really hate, I don't know, Mariah Carey, 4 times in a row. Interesting, that sort of thing. So I kind of like what Pandora's doing here.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking back to the days when Pandora first launched, because I do believe that we had it in Canada for a limited amount of time, but absolutely loved it. Get a little bit jealous hearing about all of these new Pandora features and know it's such a fantastic service. But I'd say one day I hope that we get it here, but I'm a little bit doubtful at this point. So I'll just have to admire from afar.
Well, when it's
fun, is it?
No, that's awful. And what sucks, too, is my next story, which is new features.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to go get a coffee, Sarah.
I'm just cruel. I'm cruel to you today. It's a cruel, cruel May 24th.
Mean.
Pandora has launched a new premiere station for U.S. users. And what's kind of fun about this is it's sort of like on iTunes when a bunch of us were actually here at work and a bunch of us were listening to the new Daft Punk album because they were streaming it for free. It basically in order to drum up interest for pre-orders of the new album. And Pandora is launching something that's pretty similar. It's called the Premiere Station, and you can preview albums up to a week before they launch. So it's not anything too crazy. Other services are doing this, but they're, in general, I think pretty successful, Amber, because you get people saying, oh my gosh, this is really, really good. They tell a friend. Pandora wins because the friend goes, ooh, Pandora's doing that? Oh, cool, maybe I'll sign up for an account if I don't have one already. Well, in essence, the artists will make more money off of album sales.
Interesting. Huh. That makes sense, too. Sounds like a good fit for anyone who has Pandora. I'm just teasing you now, Sarah.
I feel terrible. I feel terrible.
That's okay. We'll get over it. You know, it happens all the time. Things are launched in certain places. And fortunately for people who live in the U.S., as many of our international listeners will know, pretty much everything comes out in the U.S. first. And it's a rare thing that it happens any other way. So always a lot of tech jealousy going on, I have to say.
U.S., Australia, and New Zealand. Why not Canada? That's what I want to
know.
Why not? We all speak the same language.
Seriously? I have no idea.
Well, except those certain parts of Canada. But they probably want Pandora, too.
Of course. Who doesn't?
Make it happen. All right. Quick reminder that we record the Social Hour live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And if you're ever sort of saying, what was that thing that Amber talked about? I loved that. I want that link. Oh, I didn't write it down. Darn it. Or you'd like to catch up on shows if you're behind a couple of weeks, go to twit.tv/TSH. That is where all our show archives live. Episode 111, that was fun. That was when Yahoo and Tumblr were, you know, just acquisition rumors. Now it's a fact. So seems like, oh, look how happy we were last week. You're just like, you look like an angel. back in Florida. But so if there's ever anything that you want to revisit, or you want to share the episode with a friend because you say, you know, these gals kind of know what they're talking about, or these gals don't know what they're talking about, then you can share right from there and subscribe to the show as well. So thanks to everybody who watches and listens to us each week. And you can, of course, email us all sorts of feedback, stuff that you want us to talk about, stuff we have talked about, ideas for future segments at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, Amber, before we get into some more of our tips and spotlights and feedback, let's take a moment to thank Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Shutterstock is awesome because you can find basically exactly the image or the video that you've been searching for your next creative project. And you don't have to make it yourself. You can find it at Shutterstock. You can choose from over 900,000, yes, you heard that right, 900,000 high-quality stock video clips, 2D, 3D animation, motion graphics. The clips have a variety of digital formats. Most of them are HD. I mean, this is really, really good quality. Jason's searching for birds right now. I mean, maybe just like, okay, well, you know, I just want to see what kind of stuff I have to choose from. I mean, there is a wide, wide variety of birds. Shutterstock sources video clips from around the world, and many contributors to Shutterstock are professional filmmakers and animators. So, I mean, this is really, look at that. Look at that. Just look at the detail in that hummingbird. Oh, he's back. Oh, that's so adorable. Shutterstock reviews each video individually as well. So you don't have to worry about like, oh, there's a good video every five videos or so because some of these are garbage. They're really, really good. They don't want anything to be part of their library if it's not quality. And Shutterstock is adding 10,000 video clips each week. So every time you visit and you search for birds, you're going to find something new. Shutterstock gives you video content to bring those creative projects to the next level. And if you want something more specific, they've got sophisticated search tools. You can search and drill down by not just category of video, but resolution, who contributed it, if you like a particular contributor. You can save video assets to your clip box so you can access them anytime. And importantly, if you're working on a project with somebody else, you know, you've got five people working on this new web design or maybe this video, you can share that clip box with other team members. So that's really important. Shutterstock is a complete global offering. They've got offices all over Germany, China, Italy, Brazil, Belgium. True global marketplace for buyers and creative contributors. You can try Shutterstock today just by signing up for a free account. It's so easy. You don't need a credit card or anything. You just start an account and just start using Shutterstock to help build that next project. I mean, you might see something on Shutterstock and you can build a project around it because it's so creative. There's so much good stuff there. If you decide to purchase a plan, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR5. That's SOCIALHOUR and the number 5. And new accounts will receive 30% off any package. Wow. That's Shutterstock.com. And for 30% off new accounts, use that offer code SOCIALHOUR5. And we thank them for sponsoring this episode. All right, Amber, let's move on to our social tip of the week. Ooh, Facebook contacts on my iPhone. How would I do that?
Yeah, so this is a tip that was on Mashable. I think just yesterday they put out this little gallery that talks to you about how exactly you need to do that. It's very simple. They have a step-by-step gallery that you can kind of flip through some pretty basic information. One being that obviously you have to go into your Facebook settings. You need to sign in again at that point. And then from there, the setting should be, the default should be on for contacts. And then there are a few other steps that you need to follow in terms of updating the contacts. One being just press update all contacts there, and then the syncing will start to happen. So I think this is helpful for people, and there's a few other steps involved who depend on Facebook as far as having a lot of people on Facebook who they communicate with on a regular basis. And I know a lot of people share their phone number on Facebook, for example. I know some of my teenage cousins do this, so they rely on their Facebook contact list in terms of contacting people a lot. So this is just one simple way to be able to make sure the sync can happen on your iPhone.
Yeah, and if you like the iPhone interface and you just prefer to access your contacts that way, then it makes perfect sense. If the data's on Facebook, but you say, well, I don't really want to use Facebook as, you know, because that's an app not in the native architecture of the iPhone. This is a great little tip. I might consider doing this. Right now, I've still got this weird holdover, Amber. I don't even know how to explain it. Once a long time ago, when I was young and naive, I thought, oh, I'll sync my Google contacts onto my iPhone. But okay. What that did is that synced every contact that had ever emailed me. I mean, even if all I did was write back like, sorry, you're emailing the wrong Sarah Lane. You're looking for somebody else. I don't live in Ottawa. So it's
so funny.
Absolute complete mess. So what I should really do is blow up my contacts and then resync with my Facebook contacts, because in general, that's pretty much everybody I know.
You know, I'm kind of in the same position with my contacts. I have to say they're a bit of a mess, and I haven't been very good at keeping them tidy. And I know my brother, who I do a lot of work with, he is the best person with his contacts, whether they're on his iPhone or on his computer, and they're all neat and tidy, his addresses and phone numbers. I think I got really lazy with Gmail when they started to just pre-populate the people you're emailing, if you had emailed them again or if they had emailed you in the past. So at that point, I just gave up completely on having a great contact list. I just got lazy, thanks to tech.
I just search for people, and then I'll be like, I mean, I know we're getting off on a tiny bit of a tangent, but like my cousin, for example, it's like, I don't know her phone number by heart, you know, so I needed to call her, and I'm looking, and it's like, there's like five entries for her. One of them had the phone number in it, but yeah. The other stuff was like, I don't even know what any of that stuff was. It's weird.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Okay, Sarah, this next story is absolutely fascinating. I was reading this article, and I'm not sure I understand all of the legal elements as far as what goes on with copyright on an international level, but The Economist has posted a story that says, how does copyright work in space? And this is all based on Chris Hadfield. As I'm sure you know, about a week or so ago, he released that amazing YouTube video where he's singing Space Oddity by David Bowie.
Right.
And it has, you know, millions and millions of hits, I think over 14 million now, and a lot of attention given to that. And basically, this article dives into the issue of copyright. And if someone is singing a song in space and recording it and sending it to YouTube, for example, is that legal? Is it okay? Or do they have to ask permission? Fortunately, based on this article, Hadfield looks like he got permission from Bowie's people, his representatives. But it brings up this idea that more and more people are potentially going to be choosing space travel, maybe for as tourists in the future. And what happens to copyright beyond Earth?
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, and how high do you have to be, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like in an airplane, it's like, no, copyright law still applies to you, young lady. But maybe if you're in a rocket and you can say, no, I mean, this is space travel, then you're technically off of Earth completely. And I don't know. I mean, it almost seems like, listen, if you're an astronaut, you should be able to skirt copyright law. I mean, there's only a few of you.
Yeah,
so. Exactly.
I agree with you. You know, one of the sentences in this article, it says, the copyright issue may seem trivial, but the emergence of privately funded rocket launches, space tourism, and space exploration hold the potential for more disputes. If an astronaut were to travel to the moon, an asteroid, or Mars on a privately funded spacecraft, the situation would become even naughtier because the United Nations Outer Space Treaty of 1967 applies to countries, not companies or private individuals. And this is where it gets messier and messier. So I think Denise should talk about this on her show.
I do too. Yeah, this week
very
in law.
Interesting.
Absolutely. Let's tackle the idea of copyright law in space. We've got some people in chat room saying, well, hold on a second. Copyright probably applies where the video is played, right? And YouTube is based in the U.S., so isn't that the issue? Well, I mean, it sounds like, Amber, according to this article, it is a bit of a gray area.
It is. And I think that's one of the issues. I don't even want to begin to try to decipher it because I'm not a lawyer. I don't understand copyright. I think it's very confusing, especially with the invention of the internet. Things get muddier all the time. And then you add this extra layer of traveling to outer space. And it is a total gray area and something that could make for a very interesting conversation. So, Denise, if you're listening, you got to tackle this one.
Yeah,
maybe she has already.
Let us know. What can we do in space when I... No, actually, that's never going to happen, Amber, because I don't want to go to space. I am fine with my feet on the ground. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
But you could go and just go nuts, and nobody will ever arrest you upon your return. No.
Sounds
copyright issues.
Sounds fascinating.
So I'm sorry, before we move on.
No, I was going to just make a bad joke. But you know what, Sarah? This is why I love doing the show with you, because I think you saved me from it. So let's continue.
Save you from yourself?
Yes, pretty much.
We're doing something a little bit different this week. And normally this is the part of the show where we get to some of your emails and your feedback. And I noticed that many people, especially people who send links to us and want us to talk about particular stories, have been talking about this whole idea of Google now possibly in the running to buy Waze, which is the social network that is also the Maps network. The idea is that it's basically a crowdsourced Maps information. So not just how to get somewhere with turn-by-turn directions, but where there might be an accident, where there might be backed up traffic, how to get around it, suggested rerouting maps, that sort of thing. Well, Amber, I mean, pretty much everybody who has enough money to buy Waze, and right now the number that's being thrown around is $1 billion at least, we heard Apple wanted to buy Waze. I thought at the time, I think that makes a lot of sense because Waze is a maps application that is not only unique but beloved, and Apple Maps is not beloved by really anybody. Then we heard Facebook was interested in buying Waze. So a lot of people said, oh, well, that kind of makes sense because Facebook wants to, you know, possibly build its own OS at some point, and you've got to have a Maps application, and Facebook is all about social, and Waze is all about social, so that's a really good match. Now the latest story is that Google wants to buy Waze, and possibly almost as a defensive move to keep it away from Facebook, not because Google doesn't want the service itself, but you know Google already has a really successful Maps application. Amber, do you see a social component like Waze helping Google making the product better?
I mean, it seems like the best fit would be for Google, I think, in many different ways. Sorry, that was just a bad joke.
See what you did there.
You're supposed to save me from that. No, I think it makes sense for Google. I think they could be wanting to keep it away from other competitors like you just mentioned, but I could see them wanting something like this. It makes perfect sense. I mean, it seems like Waze is in a really, really positive position. And although I don't think Waze is available where I am, I'm familiar with the service and I love it. I mean, it seems to make a ton of sense, of assuming people are still driving safely while they're helping with traffic.
Yes, absolutely. Right. It's you know, in many ways, it's sort of like, that was not on purpose. That was not on purpose. I know that for some of Waze's features, now I'm trying to like carefully not make the pun again. It's kind of good for the person in a passenger seat. It's not always a service that you can use while you're on the go because you have to be smart about driving. You know, if you're stopped in traffic, that sort of thing. There's some exceptions. Although you're really not supposed to pull your phone out even. I mean, once you sit in that car, it's like you can't actually be holding your phone. So even if you're stuck in traffic, it's really not a good idea to be texting or updating your location information. But yeah, I don't know. I think Waze is probably not long for this world as an independent company. The company is currently based in Israel. There was some talk about whether or not Facebook would want Waze to basically relocate its headquarters to somewhere other than Israel, maybe California, maybe somewhere else. It sounds like Waze has a really good community and a really good uptick in users. And I think that the company probably thinks, we've got a good thing going like the way that it is right now, so we don't want to mess it up too much. And I feel like Google is almost the company that needs Waze the least, just again because they've got that Maps they've got Maps data that is just so much better than everybody else. Then again, you've got a social element with the best Maps service out there. And then you really have a killer product. And of course, Google is very, very committed to social, even though, you know, Amber, you and I aren't necessarily so enamored of all of Google's social offerings. It's certainly something that the company takes seriously.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Now, for our next story, we have a story that is great for people in the social media marketing space, especially on the retail side. Maybe you have an e-commerce site or you're curious about how to make it more successful. This is an interesting story on TechCrunch, basically talking about user-generated content and the integration of that content into e-commerce sites, particularly around Instagram photos. So basically, there's a company out there, I think it's called Olapic. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, but they're an analytics company and a company that helps you pull in photos from Instagram, for example, into your service. And then they help you analyze the success of having those images on your platform. So let's say, for example, you're buying from one of your favorite online retailers. All of a sudden, you would see this user-generated content, these pictures from Instagram, and you might click on them. They might help you make a purchase based on what someone else is wearing. And the neat thing about this study is the stats. So as we go down in the article, it talks about this beta the company ran with some of their clients and saying that there was between a 5 and 7% increase in the conversion rates when these retailers or e-commerce sites displayed user-generated photos on their site, which is pretty significant. That means, obviously, from having this content on their site from end users, just, you know, simple little pictures that people have posted from Instagram, people are more inclined to buy. So this kind of changes the online retailer experience in some ways. It's not just about the retailer putting out their own photos, but getting their community of loyal ambassadors or whatever you want to call them to also contribute that content to you, or running contests where people contribute using hashtags or whatever it might be.
That's interesting. I mean, do you think part of it is based on just people sort of, even if you don't realize it, you're like, ooh, Instagram, I know what that looks like. This company seems like, you know, they're at the forefront of what people like to use. I mean, obviously, it's partly what the pictures are of. And for like something like a fitness company, which I think was the example that was in the article, you know, you've seen people working out and, you know, yoga poses and new running shoes and that sort of thing. The content is relevant, but I think there's also sort of that association that, oh, this company is kind of hip, right? They're using the same tools that people want to see.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And I think people also like seeing real people, right? For so many years, we've been inundated with advertisements where they have models or other people wearing clothes who obviously don't really care about wearing those clothes. But just bringing real people into the equation, I think, will help kind of sway decisions when you're buying something. So I think more and more, everybody wants that authentic experience, that reality. And that's where social media becomes so beneficial and so interesting, because it reflects what's actually going on in the world with some of those images. So I think that might help the purchasing process a little bit.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's
it's kind of fun.
Olapic?
Yes, something like that.
That's awesome. Yeah, if you're interested in looking more at some of the stats that we showed you for you audio listeners, that link will be on our show notes at twit.tv/TSH. Speaking of twit.tv/TSH, we love hearing from all of you. Your feedback helps us make a good show, because we want to talk about the things that everybody wants to talk about, because this is a social hour after all. Write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. Don't be shy. You can talk about anything you want to talk about, as long as you keep it nice and short, 30 seconds or less. That's 2626-SOCIAL. You can also record a video for us, upload it somewhere, send us the link, just email us the link, whatever you want to do, or tweet at us, as you all do during the week between shows. Amber and I are always taking down your suggestions and try to add as many of them as possible to our lineup each week. All right, well, we're almost at Amber's Rad or Fad, my favorite part of every show. But before we do, let's quickly thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. You know, I was talking earlier about subtle differences between saying things like, you know, I'm not happy, and I've never been happy, versus I've never been so happy. That means two very different things, right? SAP has a tool called Social Media Solutions that can tell the difference between those sorts of sentiments when it applies to your brand. Because obviously, if you work for a brand, you know, at a large enterprise, and people are talking about your brand on social media, it is really hard to keep on top of all of that stuff. You want to know when people are happy. You want to know when people are angry, if your product somehow has disappointed them, if they're talking about a bad or good experience with other people on their blog, on Facebook, on Twitter, taking pictures on Instagram. All of that stuff matters. But it's a huge undertaking. So Social Media Solutions has a listening component that searches the social web all over the web in a smart way to know what is being said about your brand and how do they feel about it. And it helps you build better products, because you can incorporate real-time customer feedback to the folks who are talking about you. Helps you identify customers who might be ready to buy. If you've got stuff for sale, those customers are very important. And if they're on the fence, you want to be able to know that that's the case and be able to take it a step further and make that sale. You need to be able to understand buying signals, and those signals are being sent on social media all the time. Social Media Solutions also uses natural language processing to automatically know the differences between when people say that, you know, they're upset or that they're not, that kind of thing, because you can't possibly read all of it. Well, you know, who's got the time? We've got tools for that now. Of course, listening wouldn't be enough. You have to engage. You have to engage with your customers. It helps you improve customer service and support with the engaging component, because you can set rules. Okay, so-and-so replies to these sorts of technical issues, right? It's not me, so I can go ahead and we've got sort of a little grid of who talks to whom, depending on what the issue is. And activity on a social media stream, Twitter, Facebook, a reviewed site, can lead to direct customer engagement because it drives sales, you can quickly solve customer problems, and you can respond to customer feedback really, really quickly. And that's important. I mean, you know, it's, if you follow up sort of whenever you get around to it because there's just so much more to do, it doesn't work that way. Social moves really, really fast. So Social Media Solutions is an amazing tool, especially if somebody tweets a technical support problem. You know, you get it to the right person, you fix their problem right away. And of course, if there's a negative review out there, you want to remedy that problem ASAP. Social Media Solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing because it improves the customer service and support experience. Are you working for an enterprise company right now and say, boy, this seems like something that we would need? Go to sap.com/twit. You could take a little guided tour. See, look, Amber and I are right there on the page, sap.com/twit, to see for yourself how Social Media Solutions from SAP works. And thanks to SAP for sponsoring us. All right, Amber, I love the name of this Radder fad. It's already rad just for that reason.
It is already rad. So this is an interesting thing. This is a social media marketing campaign, and it has been done by Puma. And the idea is they've launched their own dance dictionary. They figure, based on this Mashable article, that people want to be able to communicate in more than just text and video. They want to be able to express themselves in different ways. And that's where the dance dictionary comes into play. As far as I can tell from this particular article, the idea is different words have a different dance move with them. They have a bunch of people involved as well as far as creating some of these dance moves. And it is just to further some type of expression online that involves dance.
I don't know, Amber. I don't know how I feel about this. I don't even know if I get it.
It's confusing. You probably don't get it because it confused me a little bit. I thought anything that it seems that complicated up front sometimes doesn't end up being the best marketing idea. It might be kind of fun to watch, I guess, but it gets a little silly.
So I get it. You're dancing out a word, right?
Yes.
But some of these dances, I mean, I know it's hard to dance the word for spaceship, which is one of the examples in this video, but it's like you would never get that from a guy laying on the floor convulsing.
Yeah,
They look like they're kind of talented, though.
Ooh, yeah, goodness. I think these are a bunch of very talented dancers that have come up with some of these moves. So it'll probably get attention because it is called the Dance Dictionary. Like you said, it's just very catchy.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if we'll actually see people go out there and replicate this and do these moves. But for Puma's brand, I guess it's a fun initiative. But I think it's kind of falls in the fad category because I don't see this as a long-lasting language that all of a sudden people are going to start to dance to totally express what they want to say.
No, absolutely not. And especially where it's like, hey, join us on Facebook and contribute to the Puma Dance Dictionary. All of a sudden it's like, I got to do something. Amber, I have to say that I am disappointed. Even though I like Puma shoes and I own a few pairs, they're some of my favorite tennies, but I thought that this was going to be about big cats dancing somehow, you know, in the African Sahara, and that is not the case at all. So
no.
It's a lot less rad than I thought it was.
So they've let you down, Sarah. Basically, that's what you're saying?
I don't get it. I mean, I don't even feel like Puma shoes are really synonymous with dancing. It just, this whole thing is a little odd to me. I don't understand why? I mean, is it? Are they asking for my submission? Where do I find out the word I'm supposed to dance? Or is it already done? The dictionary is done.
It's a little complex. I think it's, you know, what they would have been better off doing, and not that, I mean, I'm sure it took a lot of people to come up with this campaign, but just, you know, amuse us for a second. I think, Sarah, if they maybe came up with this idea that was like a, you know, some type of dance video that they did that was could potentially go viral, just really cool dance moves, that would have been even more interesting. Because think back to one of the most popular YouTube videos. It definitely was the evolution of dance, if you remember that guy doing the video. Oh, yeah. So there's room for another one of these. Maybe there are dancing cats, and then you really get all of the internet memes in one.
That's where you got to go, Puma. Get actual Pumas wearing Puma shoes dancing.
Sarah, your expectations are so high.
They're high, but I strive for excellence. And when it comes dancing to a Facebook page, that's how you get likes.
Yes, I think that would work. There's something there, Sarah. They're probably going to call you, so I'll need a replacement co-host when that idea goes big.
Yeah, and I join Puma headquarters, yeah, as social media maven, social media ninja.
Social media Puma.
What are we gonna say? Is this rad or fad? I say fad.
It's a fad.
I don't even know. Where do we start?
It's a fad.
Yeah, it's a fad.
I think it's a fad.
It's a fad, but hey, kudos to Puma for being creative.
Yeah, and like you, I love Puma too. So big fan of theirs. But it's a bit faddish, I think.
Yeah. Good dancers though. Gosh, yeah. It's like that guy on Mad Men last week.
Amazing.
All right, well, Amber, shucks. This is the end of the road for the Social Hour. Just this week, though. We'll be back next week. By the way, for anybody who watches our live show, I will actually be out of town next Friday. So Amber and I are going to record live the day before. That's Thursday, May 30th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. So if you can join us live, please do so. But remember, we are on demand, so if you can't join us live, that is okay. You can always find all of our episodes at twit.tv/TSH. Normally, we're live on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And all week between shows, you can find Amber and I stalking each other and you online on all the social networks. Amber, do you have anything crazy coming up in the next week?
Let me think. I don't think anything too crazy. I have a couple of speaking events coming up next week on Friday and Saturday. I'm at the Henry's Exposure Show, which is great for people who are digital photographers or want to do online video. And I'm presenting there about how to create really awesome online video. I'll be presenting both on Friday and Saturday, and I'll be there both days. So if you're around the GTA, Toronto area, come by and say hi.
Sounds good. That's awesome. That's fun. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. And I guess we'll see you next time on the Social Hour.
Yep. See you soon.